This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 445.
This podcast is sponsored by Prevenex, makers of Joint Health Plus, which we take every day to keep our knees and other joints happy. And now they make Muscle Health Plus, the most comprehensive muscle health supplement clinically proven to decrease muscle breakdown, increase lean muscle mass, and boost protein synthesis. Use the code MTASTRENGTH at checkout and have Muscle Health Plus in the cart, and you'll save 15% off your entire order, even if you've previously used our code. Just visit Prevenex.com, that's Prevenex.com, and use the code MTASTRENGTH at checkout.
Hey, thanks also to the Richmond Marathon in Richmond, Virginia. This year's marathon, half marathon, and 8K will take place November 16th in historic Richmond. Love to see you there. Come out and be a part of America's friendliest marathon. Just register at richmondmarathon.org. That's richmondmarathon.org. Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where we empower and inspire you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we speak with Academy member and coaching client Robin Walters, who went from hating to run to qualifying for the Boston Marathon. Robin shares the story of how she dreamed big, took consistent action, and leveled up her life through running. And don't forget, as an Academy member, you can get access to all of our training plans, back podcast episodes, courses, and more. Find out how to join when you visit MarathonTrainingAcademy.com. All right, great to be on the microphone. Excited about this episode. Let's do a real quick roundup of the London Marathon. We had Boston, and then boom, a week later, the London Marathon took place.
That's right. It was April 21st this year. For the men's side of things, the first place was Alexander Munyeo of Kenya in 2:04:01. And second place was Kenesia Bekele, age 41, of Ethiopia. He actually set a new Masters Marathon world record with a time of 2:04:15. On the women's side of things, Perez Jepchirchir of Kenya made history by setting the women's only world record with a time of 2:16:16. In fact, all the top three women went under the women's only record. So there's a difference between the overall world record and the women's only record. So meaning the women's field started 30 minutes before the men and they didn't have any male pacers. Second place in London was actually the overall women's marathon world record, Tigist Asefa of Ethiopia, and that record stands at 2:11:38 currently, but she ran London in 2:16:23.
Okay, that was confusing.
Okay, well, there's an overall women's marathon world record, which is held by Tigist Asefa. It's 2:11:38 currently. That was set last year. But there is apparently a women's only record, so meaning that there aren't any men running in the field currently with them, and they don't have any male pace setters because a lot of these world records are set using male pace setters or rabbits.
Oh, okay.
So that's the difference there. I kind of had to scratch my head for a second too, because I'm like, wait a minute, isn't the women's marathon world record faster than that? But it was a fast race in London for the women. And then I heard recently this week that the London Marathon has received a world record number of applications for next year's marathon. They received 840,000 applications for, I'm guessing, around 40,000 spots.
Wow.
So yeah, they're going to be 800,000 very disappointed people.
You know, that's probably a good sign that our sport is growing. Someday, hopefully before I die, I want to see a marathon with 1 million people at the start line. Wouldn't that be awesome?
I don't know if I'd want to run in it, though. That sounds like it would just be...
be a lot of people.
Chaotic. It would have to be like a rolling start like Boston did during COVID.
Oh, you know? Who knows? Could happen. Just don't ask me to organize it. Speaking of the London Marathon, we got some quick shout outs here. What do you got for us?
Well, this comes from Mackie. She says, my 8th marathon is done and dusted. The London Marathon is amazing, but I can't help but wonder why I do this to myself. Running for over 4 hours is hard. But when I finish the race, I remember why. It feels great to be able to do such a hard thing. When I'm 46 years old and in full perimenopause, it gives me confidence to challenge myself and other things in life. Thanks to MTA Coach Jen for training me.
Hey, thanks for sharing those encouraging words.
This comes from Alicia. She says, the London Marathon was simply amazing. The crowd support is out of this world. There are no words to properly describe the joy you have when crossing over Tower Bridge. I finished with a time of 3:52.56, which is a 5-minute PR. Thanks, MTA coach Abby, for getting me to another start line and helping me to continue to chase my goals. This is from Emily. She says, huge shout out to MTA coach Abby, who helped my mom and I train for today's Eugene Marathon. My mom is 62 and needed a 4:20 to BQ, and we finished in 4:16.31.
Nice.
We are incredibly grateful for the MTA community. We wouldn't have been able to do this without everyone.
That's so cool, mother and daughter running together.
I love that. That's fantastic. And we also like to give a quick shout out to MTA coach Henry. He recently ran the Earth Day 50K. And he finished 10th overall male and second in his age group, even after a wipeout that he had a pretty bloody gash on his hand. So he's a tough guy, and we're really proud of him.
He's got skin in the game.
That's right. Sweat, blood, and tears.
And finally, this is from a listener named Jennifer. Finished the Jim Thorpe Marathon, which is named after the Native American athlete Jim Thorpe. And there's a town called Jim Thorpe, which is beautiful.
She says, hello, MTA. I just wanted to say a huge thank you for all that your podcast has helped me to learn and accomplish. 4 months ago, I decided to start running again after having a demanding career and two beautiful daughters. My last marathon was in 2013 and was so poorly planned. I used a generic online plan, skipped most of my short runs, she says, and I knew absolutely nothing about refueling or hydration before or during the marathon. I didn't even have a clue that eating while running was a thing. I turned 37 this year, and as I'm approaching 40 years old, I woke up one morning refusing to believe that my best days are behind me. I've listened to countless numbers of your podcasts, many of them more than once. I found so much inspiration in both of your journeys, and I'm actually looking forward to being a master's runner soon. I love that. She says, today I finished the Jim Thorpe Marathon and I had an absolute blast. I literally danced across the finish line with my two kids running the last 0.2 in with me, and it was amazing. Thank goodness for the UCAN and AG1 you guys recommended. Next in my sights, when the time is right, is a BQ, and I fully intend to get an MTA coach to help me crush that goal. Kindest regards from PA, Jennifer.
Well, congrats, Jennifer, on finishing strong at your second marathon. Sounds like you had a well-executed plan. And yeah, we would love to help you train for your BQ when the time comes. Just want to give a virtual high five to all of you out there training, putting in the time and the miles, getting up early, building toward a better life through fitness and health. So before we jump into this interview with Robin, just want to tell you really quick about the Richmond Marathon. You guys have heard me talk about it. This will be my fourth year of going to Richmond. And we always have this meetup after the race at a brewery. And the meetup gets bigger and bigger every year. And I've got to meet so many enthusiastic runners. So let's talk about this year. We'd love to see you there. It's going to be November 16th in the historic city of Richmond. Angie, what else can we tell people about this race?
Well, this is their 47th year of running the marathon, so they do a fantastic job. You can tell it is a race put on by runners. They have great course support, fall scenery, awesome finisher swag, mostly flat course, some rolling hills.
Yep.
And it's a top 25 Boston qualifier, so there's something for everyone there. They also do a half marathon and an 8K in addition to the marathon. So you can bring the whole family and everyone do a distance or not.
Love to see you. Come hang out. RichmondMarathon.org. Jump in before the price increases. RichmondMarathon.org. Today we're talking with Robin Walters. She's a coaching client who finished the Revel Mount Charleston Marathon in Las Vegas and earned a BQ with a 16-minute cushion. And her story is interesting because at one time she hated to run, refused to even run a mile. Very similar to my story, in fact. One of our favorite types of episodes to do is where we just talk to everyday runners in the community who are changing their life through marathon training. We talked to Robin only a couple days after her marathon, so just to put it in context. So we wanted to just hear her story and unpack, you know, what led her to want to chase after a BQ and what were some of the ups and downs in the pursuit. And we're actually going to meet up with her and some other runners this summer in the Alps. We're doing the TMB, Tour de Mont Blanc. So if you hear us mention France or the Alps, that's what that is. And hey, if you can't go with us, no worries. I will be podcasting while I'm over there, bringing you a recap and some sound bites from various summer adventures. So without further ado, here's our conversation with Robin Walters. right, we're on the podcast now with Robin Walters joining us from Ohio. Robin, welcome to the MTA podcast.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be talking to you.
So Robin, before we jump into what got you into running, can you tell us about what you do for a living, your family, any hobbies outside of running, anything you want to tell us about yourself?
Yeah, I was raised in New Jersey, proud Jersey girl, fantastic family. I got married in New Jersey, but we moved to Ohio about 19 years ago. I've been married for 21 years to my husband, Charlie. He's a firefighter paramedic, and we have three kids. And I started out my career life in theater in New York City. And after a couple years, decided I just needed something different, transitioned to ministry. So in 2008, I began my ministry journey in a church here in just outside of Cleveland, Grace Church. And I actually just finished another marathon of getting my doctorate in ministry this past year. So I tend to like marathons. I don't know.
It's a good analogy.
Yeah, that's what I felt the whole time was, especially during the dissertation, was, yes, this is a marathon.
You probably connected well with that lady we had on the show last year, Vanessa, who did the PhD and compared it to a marathon.
I was right with her. I was like, yes, sister, that is so right. So yeah, I currently oversee a team of 15 different ministry leaders, and my main area is worship and music.
What was your dissertation?
Oh boy, do you really want to know? The
He's a nerd. Of course he wants to know.
I'm a theology nerd.
My dissertation was actually on the study of men and women leading together in church ministry and how we can be better together. Yeah.
Cool.
That is awesome. Something that is missing in a lot of congregations. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. you could extrapolate that to any organization.
True.
Very
exactly.
True. It was so fascinating just to do all the research for it. Yeah, it was great.
So I have an idea. To celebrate getting your doctorate, I recommend a trip to France.
Yeah, that's
this summer.
Oh, Trevor, I'm so glad you brought that up. I'm looking so forward to that. Yes.
Oh, it's going to be killer. We got such a great group of people. Everyone's a lot of fun. So speaking of fun, we're going to talk about your marathon. I'm sure it was fun every mile, right? Before we do that, why did you even want to run a marathon back in the day? I think you mentioned you ran your first one in 2020.
Yeah, you know, I actually was always the type of person, like growing up, I think I had the record for getting out of running the mile in gym class like every single year. Never ran it, never ran a mile, just really avoided it with every fiber of my being.
I can identify with that.
Yeah, so early on in childhood, I actually was a competitive dancer. So did that for a really long time, traveled all over doing different competitions, and unfortunately hit kind of a roadblock when I first started high school and began to go through puberty. I am like 5'0", snack-sized Italian with hips. Like, I mean, full curves, like, and it's just not the ballerina body. So I actually ended up having to stop dancing. My teacher told me that I would never go beyond and that my body could only do so much. And so that was obviously devastating for me. And I began a long road of body dysmorphia, food issues, all the things that so many women deal with nowadays. So after that, you know, I obviously went into theater and dabbled in aerobics when my kids were young, you know, all the little things that you do to kind of keep active and sane. But my husband ended up doing a half Ironman, and I was so inspired by just all the hard work, all the training. At the finish line, I remember just feeling this feeling like, I just want to accomplish something like that. And I would really love to see, instead of all those years of being told of what my body couldn't do, finding out actually what my body could do. So April of 2013, I said, I think I'm going to go for a run. And my whole family was like, what? Are you sure? And I mean, the kids hopped on their bikes. Everybody came with me just to make sure I was going to be okay. I made it to like the stop sign at the end of our road and back. And that was it. But I just kept going every day. I would just try again. And I remember the moment. I'm so glad I can still remember that moment when I ran a mile for the first time. So fast forward, it was only 6 months later that I ended up running my first half marathon. And I'm pretty like determined. So if I decide I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. I love adventure. I love long processes, just in for the long haul. So I ran my first half marathon and I was hooked.
Crossing that finish line, you kind of gave you a hunger for more.
Yeah, definitely.
So did you take a while to stay at the half marathon level? What was the process like of, because, you know, doubling the distance is a significant thing. And sometimes it takes people a good number of years to decide to take on that challenge.
Definitely. That's exactly what happened. So I did. I stayed with the halves for maybe 5-6 years. I actually never really thought about a full because at that point I was working full time. The kids were still like, nobody was driving. So I, you know, was taxi everywhere. But then I ended up feeling like I needed to, I was kind of like ending every half at the same time. And I wanted to sort of level up my time. So I ended up going to a Olympic lifting gym that we have here in 2019. I just bit the bullet. I was like, I need to do some strength training. So ended up finding this amazing community at this gym. It's called Pro Sports Performance. And it was actually started by two Browns players in the Cleveland area. And so there's a great community there, made a ton of friends. And it was a great way for me to sort of supplement the runs. And I found that strength training just absolutely was a huge step just to level up. So I only had begun that for like 6 months and then COVID hit and our church closed in a sense of in person.
Right.
But we were no longer meeting on Sundays. We would meet on Saturdays as a team to record all our services and then we would have them stream on Sundays. So Sundays were all of a sudden, whereas it used to be my longest workday, I had all this time. So I started training for my first full and ended up finding a race that actually was in person, October of 2020. It's the Towpath Marathon in Cuyahoga Valley National Park is a big park system here. So I ended up jumping into that. Same time, I also found a sports dietitian that helped me fuel my body for the work that I was asking it to do. You know, obviously, it took a lot because I had and still sort of like struggle with those food issues. And I'm one that tends to like gain a little weight when I'm training. So I was wrestling with that, but she really helped me in my healing journey just to see food as fuel. So I ran that first full in October of 2020. I think I did a 4:19. I'm just glad I finished. There were two big hills at the end. I'm like, who designed this course? What in the world? Like, this is a bizarre course. So I just couldn't believe it. Yeah. And then, of course, I didn't know anything about running the tangent. So I was all over the road and ended up, I think, running like 27 miles. So that was an interesting experience. But I think I just wanted to finish. I was like not going for any record, just wanted to finish.
Well, that's awesome. You kind of talked about several things that were empowering in your journey. You know, starting to run was a very empowering thing, being able to find something that you could do and that you could see measurable progress from, and then adding the dimension of strength training in, which I feel like is very empowering for women. I mean, for everyone. But, you know, feeling strong in your own body, being okay to take up space, I think that's so important. And then dialing in your nutrition, those are like really, really key factors that even though your first marathon sounds like it was tough, probably set the stage for you to have the success that you did.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of like a research nerd as well. So any info, if I'm starting a hobby or if I'm starting something, I just want to find every book, every podcast, every article, and find out as much info as I can. So for me, it was like, okay, what's going to help me get to the next level? And I think too, when you're raising kids, you're working full time, there's so much, obviously, with the pandemic, it was so helpful to have something positive to focus on where other things were stressful or were really, I was struggling with you know, different situations. This was so helpful to be able to put my energy into. And I really, people ask like, oh my gosh, you wake up at 4 a.m. and how do you blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, I have to do this to be able to do all the other things that I'm tasked with in my life.
4 a.m, man.
Yeah.
Trevor shuddered visibly over here when you said 4. 4 a.m.
It's tough. At this point, I recognize I lift or I'll run for, do my run first, and then I'll lift for about an hour. And to be able to fit it all in, I've struggled with sort of letting go too much of the lifting. First of all, because my community at that gym is huge. They've become some of my greatest friends, and my kids have started coming with me. Oh, so cool. Yeah, first my son, when it was his senior year in high school, he got up with me to go to this 5:30 class I would run before and meet him there. Wow. And it was like a real bonding time. And then now this year, my daughter, who's a senior, has started to come with me. And this week, you know, I'm lying around like crazy. She's like, Mom, when are we going back to the gym? I'm like, you can go. You can go without me. It's fine. Like,
Mama needs to rest.
Yeah. So it's really been so great to bring them along with me. They haven't caught the running bug, but they all really like the lifting. So I'm trying to keep that up to keep that time with them.
Yes. And what a fantastic example that you're setting for them. I think seeing, you know, especially a parent who is dedicating themselves to a physical pursuit, whether it's running, it's lifting, whatever it is, shows a kid indirectly that, wow, they really care about their health. They want to be strong. This is a value for our family. And even if they may not become runners right away, I feel like it increases the potential that later in life, just maybe.
You drag them with you long enough, hopefully. You know, who knows? I mean, my kids have never been real like, they dabbled in sports, but it was never really their main thing. And so I just was so surprised that they not only wanted to come, but wanted to wake up so early to go. And I'm sure it was just because they didn't want to go by themselves, but
It helps to have somebody, you know, that's there with you, and it makes transition to a new activity more enjoyable.
100%. Yeah.
So in 2020, when you were researching how to run a marathon, how to train, is that how you found us?
Guys, yes. So you were the first podcast I came across, and instantly, I really felt a connection with you guys. And for me, I'm very relational. I love just feeling that connection. First of all, there's a dynamic between the two of you that reminds me of my husband and I. He's a goof, and you're not a goof, Trevor, but he's a goof. Funny, so funny, would totally be on those beer marathons with you. Like, just is a fun guy. I tend to be more like, okay, we have a system and I need to do some research. So I just really resonated with you guys, and just, yeah, you guys made me want to listen. Every topic was different. I felt like I was getting a good amount of tools, you know, info and research. So, and even now, I have to say, you guys do such a great job. I, you know, try this one and try that one. And you guys are, whenever there's a new episode, I'm like, yes, it's going to be a good day.
The gold standard of running podcasts.
You heard it here.
All right. So you ran the first marathon. You must have gotten the bug because you kept going with it. Started listening to MTA and others, and then decided eventually to get a coach.
Yes. That was like, you know, you're constantly looking for, okay, when is it time to sort of level up? And for me, I finished my fourth marathon this past October in Indianapolis. And that was definitely the fastest one. Let's see, I think it was like 3:48 and some change. But nice. I felt the whole time like, oh, that's it for me. Like, that's my top. I don't know how I possibly did it that fast for me. And I ended and was extremely sore. I had a little niggle in my hip the whole time, so, which I'd never felt before. So ended up dealing with that for a couple months afterwards. But right away felt like, okay, I think I've taken myself and me and my, you know, novice research skills as far as I can go. And, you know, I had asked my husband, I said, okay, would this be a good finance-wise time to do this? Yes. And everything fell into place. So yeah, I jumped on. I am with Athena now, who I will sing her praises all day long. And the level of detail that she has in her training, it's also great because she's like comfortably present with me. I don't feel this pressure like this is one more thing I have to, oh gosh, I have to make sure I talk to Athena, or, you know, there's no pressure or stress. It's literally, you know, whatever I need. And if I don't need a phone call, then that's fine. But she offers it all. And I know if I needed something that she would be there. And she also, I loved, she took me to a higher level of weekly mileage than I had ever done. And I thought, oh, are you kidding? Like, I think I peaked at like 60 miles a week. And I thought, there's no way. And after I did it, I was so thankful. It was amazing that she felt comfortable to push me further than I'd ever gone. It was great.
So did you guys talk about like a certain goal? Were you trying to get faster? Were you targeting a certain race at that point?
Yes. So when I turned 40, I said, I think by the time I'm 45, I want to qualify for Boston. And that was before I had even run a full marathon. So lofty goal, like, yikes.
Well, sometimes you have to like put that vision out there, you know, to start taking those steps for it to come to pass. So that's really cool.
Think big and take action.
Mm-hmm. Literally. And I mean, no one's going to die if I don't. So it's totally fine. So I told her my goal. I also had mapped out 2024, obviously, with Revel Mount Charleston in April, then the Alps with you guys in July. And then I got into the New York City Marathon for November.
Wow.
Which for me is such a sweet moment because going home and running the streets that I grew up going to, and I can tell already, I don't think I'll be quote unquote racing that one because I'll just be crying the whole time. Like, oh my gosh, this is such a sweet moment. So I had my year laid out. I told Athena I would love for Mount Charleston to be a PR. And I just would love to give myself like 8-minute buffer. Like that would be great. And obviously I've never run a downhill race before. Had no idea what to expect. I listened, Angie, even I listened to your downhill podcast. I mean, this was like years ago you guys did one. And yeah, just any sort of research I could do on those downhills. So yeah, she helped me. She knew I wanted to go to have a PR. She knew it was a downhill race and she knew that I was looking to just get better. So she challenged me in several different ways. Every other week I would have a hill workout. The weeks I didn't do hills, I would do more like long marathon pace. Yeah.
And then you kept up your strength training as much as, you know, time allowed during your training.
I did. It's so funny because I think at the peak, it was like 3 hours a day. And I knew in the past marathons, I had actually eased up on deadlifts and back squats because I thought, well, I don't want to overtax my legs. But then I did a ton of research and found that actually that's when you should be doing those. So I kept up with the back squats, deadlifts, bench, and push press mostly. And I cut out any of that extra cardio that the gym would do. So I was strategic with that. But the compound lifts I wanted to keep in. And I couldn't disappoint my daughter. So,
right, exactly. You need that time with her.
Yeah, yeah.
And Coach Athena is really big on encouraging people to strength train. So, you know, that is the wonderful thing about MTA coaches is that is something that's really emphasized.
Yeah. And she even had separate strength exercises for me that if I didn't specifically do that, the ones that she had listed that day in the gym, that I would do those right when I got to the gym or, you know, fit them in some way. But she gave me all sorts of different things to do.
Hey, quick break to thank our awesome sponsor, Prevenex. It's really important to take care of your joints. Your joint health, your muscle health is critical, especially when you're putting in the miles, pounding the pavement. Injuries are going to happen. You know, it's just part of being a runner. But one thing that we are so happy to have on our toolbox is a joint health supplement and a muscle health supplement. You heard Robin talk about loving to strength train. Angie also loves to hit the weights.
Yeah, we've been taking Prevenex for probably a couple of years now and really have enjoyed the benefits of that and have, in the last few months, started taking the Muscle Health Plus, which combines doses of creatine monohydrate, MyHMB, branched-chain amino acids, other essential amino acids, and estrogen to make the most comprehensive muscle health supplement available. These ingredients together are clinically proven to decrease muscle breakdown, increase lean muscle mass, boost protein synthesis, enhance strength, all those things that I personally want.
Yeah, so check them out, Prevenex.com. Look for Joint Health Plus, which we started taking originally through Prevenex and still do. It's going to help us get through our races this year and other adventures. And then look for Muscle Health Plus. You can use the code MTASTRENGTH at checkout. If you have Muscle Health Plus in the cart, you'll save 15% on your entire order, even if you've already used our code. Go to Prevenex.com, use the code MTASTRENGTH. Prevenex.com, use the code MTASTRENGTH. Let's talk about race day. You posted the course was killer on the legs and the last few miles were brutal, but the solid training enabled me to push through to the end. So we want to hear about how brutal it was.
Oh, guys.
And how you kept pushing, because you finished in 3:33:36 with a 16-minute buffer for Boston. So you're definitely going to Boston.
Yeah. Oh, man. I will not start rejoicing until September till I get that.
You for sure have a big enough buffer. I can promise you that. Take that out of your mind right now.
Man, it just feels like you never know. You know?
Well, exactly. So I heard the race morning, Mount Charleston was freezing up on top, like brutally cold.
So this is where I think us Northerners have an advantage. So my training through the winter, and this winter wasn't too bad as far as snow. Like I only had to go on a treadmill 3 times this winter. So it wasn't that bad. But the temperature, I'm used to running my long runs in 10, 15 degrees. So for me, I got up to the top of the mountain. And of course, they bus you up there at like 4 a.m. And I'm sitting next to a guy who from Michigan. And he's like, yeah, this doesn't seem too bad. I mean, it's just 20 degrees.
It's a Canadian summer.
Yeah. So we have all these people from California, Nevada around us who they have all those heaters, like the stand-up heaters that people are huddling around. And I get off the bus and I'm walking over to the porta potties and I'm like, oh, this isn't so bad. So I didn't even use my Mylar blanket or whatever. And I was more concerned because it had snowed the night before. So when Charlie and I landed in Vegas, we actually got our rental car and we took a drive up the mountain because I just always like to see the course before I run it if I'm not from there. So we drove all the way up so I could see, okay, it's going to be dark when I'm up here. So this is what it looks like. So I could just be comfortable with that. And so sure enough, after we drove the course, they had snow. And when they're busing us up the hill, we see these snow plows everywhere. And I'm like, oh no. So I was just terrified of slipping. So we started the race. Immediately there's an uphill and that's where all the ice and snow are. And I'm looking around and luckily I didn't see anybody else slipping. So that was helpful. But you know, when you're running on ice or just in colder, icy conditions, you're kind of tensing your calves. You're not really in your stride. So I think like the first mile was tough. Also, I felt like the elevation hit me at that point. It was, I think, just about 8,000 feet up at the top. And so once we got past mile one and we got through the ice, it definitely, I mean, I knew I was running downhill, but I didn't necessarily feel like that I'm barreling down this hill. Like it was like, yeah, this is still a marathon.
Still work, isn't it?
Yeah, this is still. So my goal had been to kind of settle into like an 8:23 pace. I didn't want to give more than a 7 effort wise because I knew at the end I'd be really hurting and I didn't want to fight the mountain at the same time. I wanted to let it take me down, but not to the point where I was like at an 8 or 9, and then at the end I'm dying. So I'm running down right from about mile 6 to 20 was just this beautiful, like, mountains everywhere. The sun came out. The sky was blue. It was a beautiful race. And I felt like I kind of leveled into like a 7:55. And I couldn't believe it. And I kept looking at my watch like, oh no, oh no. And but I felt so good. I was like, you know, this is like they always say, don't do it. Don't do it. But I just kept with it. So then around mile 20, we got sort of off the mountain. We turned into more of like a residential area. And I started to feel real nauseous. And I knew, okay, let's be realistic here. You've just run faster than you've ever run, like, for that long. Also, like, I'd end up taking about maybe 5 gels a marathon. I had taken 4, and I had a pack with some electrolytes in it. And I just thought, you know what? I'm going to stop. I'm at 20, 21. I'm not going to take more gels because I really do feel like if I do, I'm probably just going to be hurling on the side of the road. Right. So I stopped fueling at that point. And unfortunately, that was like you start going uphill at that point. So I slowed a little bit, but was able to just keep my head down, keep going, keep all the mantras going.
What do you think was causing the nausea?
You know, I do feel like I can take gels, but I can only take them to a certain extent. After like 4 or 5, I tend to be like, okay, that's just enough. yeah. And who knows? I think too, it was full sun at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause listeners, to anyone that doesn't know about the race, it could be 20 degrees on the mountain, but like 70 to 80 degrees once you get down to the valley.
I had gone to Salvation Army like the week before the race and bought a bunch of clothes that I knew I could just take off and throw away. And by that point, I was sweating. It wasn't necessarily really hot because the heat is dry because it was like 60 degrees or so. But the sun, it was full sun. I was really glad I put sunscreen on, even though I had to like bundle up over my sunscreen. So I bet it was a mixture of the full sun for so long. Plus, I'm Cleveland. We have like 3 sunny days a year. So it's like, okay, what is this bright orb in the sky? And I'm in my winter paleness. So sun, yeah, the pace that I was keeping and just the gels. Yeah.
Okay.
I also tend to have a little bit of trouble with foot blisters. I am still on the journey of trying to find the right shoes, even after I feel like I've tried all of them. But every marathon, I bleed through my shoes.
Man.
My Indianapolis marathon, my feet were completely wrecked. So this time, I chose to go with a daily trainer that had a bigger toe box, and it was better, but still, it was still painful towards the end. So I was dealing with that. But I ended up finishing with still feeling like I'd never hit the wall, did not feel like I was completely spent. And I definitely attribute that to the coaching. I think just everything that Athena challenged me with helped me to finish being able to still, I think at the end I was maybe 8:30, 8:45. So not too bad.
You mentioned when it was getting tough after mile 21 and just grinding it out those final miles that you had some mantras that you were relying on. Do you have any that you can share?
Yeah, I love I can do hard things. And I think I've listened to that particular podcast episode at least 4 or 5 times. it's just so good. I can do hard things. I've experienced so much healing with my body, with what my body can do. My body can do hard things. And obviously, I'm just a real person of faith. I pray a ton. So just being able to say, yeah, you can do this, run the mile you're in. I really do try and break it down into, okay, let's just get to that stoplight. All right, we're at that stoplight. Let's just get to the next one. You know, in those last couple miles, they still tend to be, for me, it's like not a race until you hit 21. Mm-hmm. It's like, yep, there it is. Pull out all the tools.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's negotiation central. You're negotiating with your mind because it's all mental. Yep.
It is.
I know it's a little bit hard to do math in those later miles, but did you ever hit a point where you're like, I'm going to make it and I'm really going to make it under my BQ time?
Yes. Yeah, so I will, at the beginning of a race, I'll have like a little, I'm such a dork. I'll have like a little index card that I'll write, okay, by halfway, I want to be at this time. By 16 miles, I want to be at this time, 20 this time, 23. And halfway, I looked at my index card and it was all wet from my sweat. And I was like, I can't even read it. I was 10 minutes ahead. So you try to temper your excitement. You're like, anything can happen. There was like twice during the first half of the race that I felt like a little like twinge in my ankle. And I had never felt that before, sort of was nervous if it was the downhill slope that was sort of causing my muscles to be working different things than normal. And so lots of prayer, lots of like, okay, please, I just really don't want to get injured. I'm thinking about the Alps, like, I don't want to be injured for the Alps. So yeah, I did. I realized right around the half that I was in a really good spot. So that felt good, but you'd still, anything can happen in that last half. Yeah.
You almost feel like you don't want to jinx it by thinking that, oh, I've got it in the bag.
100%. Do not celebrate yet. Don't celebrate. One of the things that I really have taken to, which I learned from Kipchoge, was how he smiles. And so I've started, when it starts to feel tough, when I'm in that last couple miles, I'll just put a big old smile on my face. And that has helped me also like just get through that. So I didn't celebrate, but I allowed myself to plaster on the smile. Yeah.
That's great. So I remember last year we were there, we did the half, and it was so tempting to stop and turn around because as the sun was coming up, it's illuminating the mountain, which is behind us. And I also remember they had donuts at the finish line.
Yep. I'm not even hungry. I can't imagine eating or drinking a donut, or sometimes they have pizza and I can barely stomach the chocolate milk. So
you're like, I have to do this.
I know I need recovery. It. Yeah, I know I need it. But man, they actually had some of those compression boots at the finish. That was incredible. Like just putting those all the way up, compression of the legs right after the race was huge. And then we actually ended up being in a hotel that was like a block off the strip. So that night we had to walk to go anywhere. So it was like, you know, the walking afterwards that really helped. Yeah.
I hope you didn't stay at the Excalibur.
Oh, no, no.
little callback to our episode last year.
Live and learn. Live and learn. Yeah.
Misadventures at the Excalibur Hotel.
Oh, man. I tell you what, though, Vegas is incredible for people watching. It is
unparalleled.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. So I'm sure it was a happy time crossing that finish line. As far as the downhill, you know, downhill marathons are fast and awesome, but they're brutal on the quads. And how did you feel after the next couple of days?
I finished the race and my husband found me right away and he swept me up in his arms and gave me like the biggest hug. And I thought, that's when I thought I was going to die. You're squeezing too hard. he was so excited. I couldn't believe it. I just could not believe it. I just aged up into the 45 to 49. So
yay.
I was like, wow, I qualified even if I would have been in the younger age group. And I couldn't believe it. I was flabbergasted. So yeah, I kind of limped over to a curb, sat down, looked at my feet. It was just epic. I will say I definitely didn't think it was as easy as like maybe it's, you know, some people would say, oh, downhill, that's got to be so easy. It was not an easy race. It definitely trashed my body.
yes.
Definitely. The next day, I could not really walk. I would get up and I knew I needed to. I knew it was important. And Athena said, make sure you walk. I know it's you're not going to want to, but that's definitely what's going to do it, what's going to jumpstart the healing. So we did walk around Vegas a bit, very slowly. And I was thankful that we had stayed an extra day just to rest, stretching a lot, nice and easy, nothing too crazy. Monday, we got up at 3 to fly home to make it in time for the eclipse because Cleveland was like a totality spot. Yes. So we were like, well, we can't miss that. So trying to motor through the airport was tough. But yeah, I would say by Tuesday, I woke up and felt markedly better.
That's good.
Yeah, today I feel great. It's been a couple of days. I just keep trying to stretch. And I guess I'm just still in awe that I am not injured. Or that I don't feel any residual besides soreness. And so, yeah, I would definitely say strength training, coaching, it not only gives you such a fantastic training experience, race experience, but then afterwards, the recovery, I do feel like I'm recovering much better from investing in those two things.
That's fantastic. I always feel like the couple of days after you run a downhill marathon, it's like a taste of maybe what it'll feel like to be in a 90-year-old body.
Yes.
Oh, brother.
The bathroom seems so far away.
Oh, sitting down. And this is where guys just have such an advantage.
Exactly.
Man, sitting down to go to the bathroom. That was not fun.
It's like you need one of the bars on either side of the toilet.
Yes. Yes.
When you got back to Cleveland, did you get an unobstructed view of the eclipse?
We did. So we pulled into our driveway at like, I want to say it was like 2:45, and our daughter was home and she ran out. We all got chairs, sat in the driveway, were able to see it went completely dark.
Well, you just got there right in the nick of time.
Yes.
From Vegas.
Yes.
Oh, it was perfect timing.
It was such a great weekend all around. Yeah.
Yes.
This was like a realization of a vision that you had even before you ran your first full marathon. You had this desire on your heart to run Boston. What could you say to people about having a vision and putting in the faith and the belief that you have what it takes to actualize that vision?
Well, it's funny because I look back at my life and think of everything that I dealt with limitations on my body, whether it's, you know, being short or being curvy or even limitations with being a female in my line of work. It seems that I've been tasked to overcome different things. And of course, my journey is different from everybody's. And I don't venture to say that I am overcoming that much, but the consistency compounds. And it's just a little step each day. And so what I have found is if I just take a step forward every day in the direction of who I want to be, because ultimately it's not about one particular race or one particular accomplishment, but it's who do I want to be? What type of person do I want to be? I want to be the type of person who can run and who can accomplish and who can do these things. And I've for too long spent my life thinking and deciding that my worth was based in what other people thought of me or what other people told me I could do or I couldn't do. So it's, you know, it's been such a journey, not only body-wise, but in my, I lead worship for a living and sing for a living. And I remember in fifth grade, my choir teacher told me and my mom that I would never amount to anything. And I would always be a choir singer, but now I get to lead worship for 4,000 people every weekend. So it's just, it's just crazy. So yeah, I would just say it's the daily work, really. You could say run the mile you're in for each day, work the day you're in, and just win that day. And pretty soon, it's years later, and you look back and you're like, oh my gosh.
How did I get here?
Yeah, and anyone can do it. You know, I, 2013, I was 34. When I ran my first mile. So it's like.
And you probably thought you were going to die.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I have a long way to go and I'm not, you know, the fastest person in the world, but I'm so excited for where I am. And for me, it's a big accomplishment.
Awesome.
It is a big accomplishment. We're so proud of you. And it's been so fun to just hear you dissect your journey. We really love when people open to up to us and just share all that. And it's really inspiring to us. And I know to our audience as well.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. This has been such an honor, truly.
So you know how to sing, but can you yodel? Because I'm thinking, you know, when we're in Switzerland, I hear some yodeling on those mountaintops.
Oh, man. I feel like you guys are going to best me in that for sure.
We don't have any hidden talents with that.
No yodeling. My grandma used to yodel when she was alive. But
see, it's in the family. So it's there somewhere.
Well, great speaking with you, Robin. Congrats again on the epic BQ time there at the Rebel Mount Charleston Marathon. And here's to living your best life.
Well, thank you guys so much.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. So fun to talk to Robin and hear her story. And she mentions leveling up in life through running, through strength training, and through hiring an MTA coach to go after her Boston qualifying goal. So if you'd love to level up in your marathon training, we've got coaches that can help you accomplish whatever goal you're working toward. We've got a coach who has probably done it and can show you how and guide you. You can find out more about how coaching works over at marathontrainingacademy.com/coaching. Hey, and finally, thanks to our sponsor, AG1. We always take AG1 just here when we're at home, but we also take it on the road with us. It's a great all-in-one supplement to cover your nutritional bases.
And like Jennifer mentioned in the shout-outs, taking AG1 was one of the things that helped give her energy for her marathon training and bounce back after her race, even the same day of the marathon.
To give it a try, go to drinkag1.com/MTA. You can get 5 free travel packs with your first purchase and a 1-year supply of vitamin D. drinkag1.com/MTA. Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for being a listener. You guys are awesome. Until next time, remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.